Thank you. Let's move on to the third speaker today, Mr. Jan Huber, the former Executive Secretary, the Antarctic Treaty Secretary. Jan is from the Netherlands, and he's going to speak on the ATCM, where it's headed after establishment of the Antarctic Treaty Secretary. Jan?
Thank you, Professor Zachary.
Let me express, first of all, my appreciation of being given this chance to join the forum and to speak on a topic that is near to my heart. Now, my position, the position from which I speak, is the one that I just left, namely that of Secretary to the Antarctic at the Antarctic Treaty Secretariat. And in a way, my perspective will be similar to that of the previous speakers, the previous two, because for all of us, we weren't primarily involved in the setting of Antarctic policy, but in carrying it out. But in another way, I'm returning to this very much to this topic of governance. And I'm not going to say anything about science, because that is the one area that the Secretariat of the Treaty had absolutely no involvement in at all. When you are at a Secretariat, you look at the documents, the treaties, the measures passed by the ATCM, of course, in a different way than if you are involved in the policymaking process. Your concern is not so much with the text, with the contents of the measures, as with the functional aspects, the operational aspects of them. How are they adopted? How are they approved? How do you keep the body of decisions of the ATCM? How do you keep that up to date? How do you find out which measures are still current and which are now obsolete? That is the way I'm going to talk about it. And my main, I'm going to talk not about the content of the legislation, but about the legislative process and about their implementation. My main concern in doing this is that, in my view, the regulatory regime established by the treaty, and especially by the Environment Protocol and its annexes, has actually by now far outstripped the capacity of the parties and the ATCM to administer it. Or, to put it in a different way, the ATCM represents the core or the nerve center of the de facto administration of Antarctica. But it doesn't operate like that. Instead, it still operates purely as a diplomatic conference, negotiating agreements in a confidential, clubby atmosphere far away from the public and the media. A wonderful forum, by the way. The best one that I've ever entered in for the purposes of diplomatic negotiations. But it is totally unequipped under the present circumstances for the tasks that they have received, namely, that have developed, namely those of the de facto administration. So, first I'm going to say something about the legislative process. Then I'm going to talk about two aspects of the Antarctic governance, which are information exchange and inspections. Then I'm going to say something about increased cooperation or a closer cooperation between the parties. And at the end, I will present some conclusions. First of all, how are agreements approved? Well, we've had, since the treaty went into effect, we've had two other agreements. We've had the protocol and six annexes and about 400 measures. And you probably know that the entry into effect of these measures, or in any case now of a great part of them, of all those that are considered to involve binding regulatory mechanisms, are governed by Article 9 of the treaty. And that involves a process after it has been adopted by the treaty of approval in all the countries. Now, how do the countries actually, how is the performance of this regime? The most recent ATCM of which the recommendations were approved is that of the, in Cape Town, 2004, right? No. Maybe Kyoto, 1995? No. The last ATCM, the measures of which have actually been approved by the parties, is Rio de Janeiro, 1987. 20 years ago. Now, that is a little bit unfair to this statement has to be qualified because, of course, some measures that were felt to be very important by the parties have been approved in a much faster way, sometimes within 5 years. Yeah? But, nevertheless, the tourism guidelines, the only, the basic regulation concerning tourism has never yet entered into effect. Then, once the measures are on the books, how do you find out which ones are still current and which are obsolete? Well, this is an effort that I was engaged in even before I became Executive Secretary of the Antarctic Treaty Secretariat. I've been struggling since the St. Petersburg meeting, 2001, on this subject, and generally, sadly, the ATCM has every time said, yes, very important question, yes, we must do something, but unfortunately, we have no time for it at the moment. The interest in these efforts is not very great, and neither is it in the actual implementation questions. Now, we go to the next topic. The second topic, as I said, is two crucial aspects of the governance of Antarctica, and that is the information exchange. Parties to the treaty are obliged, it is mandatory, that they inform the other parties about their activities, and they all have the right to inspect the other people's activities, the other parties' activities. Which is all laid down in Article 7. Information exchange. Now, this has been divided in different kinds. You have a pre-season information where the parties announce to other parties what they're going to do. And then you have the post-season report, and then you have permanent information. Most important, of course, is pre-season information, because that is the basis on which parties then later could inspect to see, well, how are these activities actually being carried out. And this information should be supplied. It now is supplied to the electronic information exchange system of the Secretariat by the 1st of October. As of now, 2 months later, 2 months later, seven of the 28 consultative parties had actually submitted the required information. And in general, even counting the parties that submit their information much later, the total figure doesn't reach much beyond half. Now, I must emphasize again, this is not an optional matter. This is absolutely required of all parties that they do that. Inspections. More than half of the consultative parties have never, ever participated in any inspection. It is, generally speaking, only the largest and most active parties that carry out these inspections. Okay. The ATCM, of course, had an inkling itself that it was going to evolve into an administration of Antarctica, or in any case, that, you know, the task of actually carrying out the regulatory regime established in the Environment Protocol was on the consciousness of the ATCM, and so they decided in 1992 to set up a secretariat. Unfortunately, it wasn't established until 2004, but I won't go into the reasons for that. Now, I was the chair of the group that negotiated the administrative and financial aspects of the secretariat. And those negotiations, before I became executive secretary. And those negotiations were extremely interesting. Because a main concern of the parties was a concern that any secretariat, no matter what its size or its powers, would inevitably grow into some kind of bureaucratic monster and would take power away from the parties. And so in the instruments setting up the secretariat, almost every third sentence has a phrase like, under direction of the ATCM, under supervision of the ATCM, the secretariat will do this and this and this and this. Mandate, the Measure 1, 2003, the basic charter of the secretariat, doesn't start with the depiction of the tasks of the secretariat. No, it says the secretariat is an organ of the ATCM and is subordinate to it. Very clear language, one might expect. However, what is the ATCM? The ATCM, unfortunately, still maintains the fiction that it has no institutional character. For a number of parties, it is absolutely verboten to talk about continuing institutions, to talk about standing bodies. All that is completely ruled out. So it sets the secretariat up in a rather strange situation that we are supposed to be have no independent existence but be following instructions, except we can only get those instructions during 2 weeks a year. Now I go a little bit further away to the other implementation questions. Implementation of the Antarctic Treaty System regime is left entirely to the parties acting through their national expeditions. Fair enough. But that sets up a challenge. The implementing arrangements worked fine in 1961 with 12 parties, no tourism, very difficult access, and just a few scattered, isolated expeditions. It is my view that they are not adequate in Antarctica today. Antarctica is getting easier and easier to go to. Global communication covers almost the entire continent. The number and the kind of actors have diversified beyond the range of what was in existence in 1959. Many countries have contracted out part of their operations. They're not all military anymore who carry it out. They're multi-state organizations. They're private organizations. So if parties want to continue the Antarctic Treaty System as an effective instrument of governance, they will have to increase their cooperation. Now, all this, of course, I say in the full knowledge that the system works, has worked very well. But it shouldn't rest on its laurels. This is not a plea to set up a new multinational kind of administration. It is not a plea for the secretariat to become an Antarctic authority. None at all. but parties should assign more human resources to Antarctic governance, at least so they can fulfill their clear treaty obligations on information exchange and inspection. I think parties, instead of just relying on the expedition leaders to keep their own expeditions in order, they should explicitly assign monitoring and implementation tasks to their personnel in the field. And they should consult with each other on governance issues, as they have started to do in some areas, like at King George Island. The information exchange system that has now been set up, and it's very recent, I do recognize that, but it should be only the beginning of becoming an operational tool for the governance of Antarctica. Now, I must tell you a funny experience that I've had at times. You will have a debate in the ATCM on tourism, and a party will say, we should have a database, a tourism database with all the relevant information. And, well, it's maybe a good thing that I wasn't participating in the debate, because we would actually have an adequate tourism database if the parties supplied the information that they're required to the electronic information exchange system. And the ATCM should leave the fiction that it doesn't exist between meetings. It should overcome its resistance and set up standing bodies to oversee the governance process, because otherwise it will become less and less relevant. Well, it is my I've thrown out some ideas which I'm sure are somewhat controversial, but I do believe that the system has to change in order to remain relevant. There is a great danger that the ATCM, in its present mode of operation, becomes more and more of a paper exercise and less relevant to the happenings in Antarctica. Thank you.
Present from the International Board.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks again for your very thought-provoking address.